Hey, good evening. Welcome to Friday. Hi, this is the Molloy Program. Glad you could make it. Hope you stick around for a while, as long as you can stand it. I know this program is different to listen, difficult to listen to. I might even say a bad word or two. Oh, no! We have all sorts of odds and ends tonight, and believe it or not, we'll probably take some phone calls, too. Hal Sparks is sponsoring this hour. Thank you, Hal. Hal Sparks, comedian, actor, and Stephanie Miller sidekick, right? Would that be a good way to describe Hal? Hal Sparks is our first hour sponsor tonight. Thanks a lot, Hal. Appreciate it. Did you hear about the Quran-burning freak from Florida who almost shot his legs off? Oh, God, I wish he wouldn't have missed. Did you hear about that? He was in Detroit, apparently, for... he's trying to get a permit to go demonstrate in front of a mosque in Dearborn, Michigan, which has about as many Muslims as downtown Aleppo, Syria. I mean, it's, you know, a serious, Muslim, Arab-speaking population there. And so this freak, Terry Jones, he's in Detroit seeking a permit from the court. And while he's there, he does a radio interview at radio station WJBK in Detroit. And part of the interview was a discussion with an Islamic leader in Detroit. And when he finished, he returned to his car, and a gun, which, you know, Terry Jones, being a preacher, being a modern-day Christian, of course he's armed all the time. Remember, they want to be armed when they rapture up, because you never know who you're going to meet when you're floating up in the air, you know. Keep your guns handy, man. Anyway, so Terry Jones, who is a preacher and owns a gun, accidentally fired a bullet into the vehicle's floor. he's not going to demonstrate in front of a mosque. It's at Dearborn's Islamic Center of America. Terry, why couldn't you have aimed? Do you know that Terry, this Reverend Terry Jones, is a high school classmate of Rush Limbaugh? You know that? Figures. Has Limbaugh announced yet that he's going to come out and speak against OxyContin? We suggested that the other night. I think it would be great to speak in front of, you know, a crowd, maybe 30-something people who are in drug rehab, and just tell them that OxyContin is a bad thing to do. I haven't heard anything yet. I don't know. What else we got? Oh, in Texas... Texas that apparently really irritated God. I mean, think about it. A couple of weeks before Easter, God starts punishing Texas by setting the whole damn state on fire. This is after denying Texas any rain for a very long time. They've had a drought down there for a long time. So first is the drying up of the earth. It's an ancient ceremony. And then there is the striking a cigarette lighter to some prairie grass and setting Texas on fire, which apparently God did because there's something in Texas that really pisses him off. I'm not sure what it is. Now, I'm only using the logic and the reasoning of the Jerry Falwells and the, well, he's dead, Pat Robertsons and Pastor Hagee and all these other crazy bastards that, you know, have so totally perverted anything good about this guy named Jesus who walked around the Middle East 2,000 years ago. They've just totally destroyed it, corrupted it, polluted it, ruined it. But that's what they usually say, right? Anytime there's a huge catastrophe. I mean, who was it that said that the earthquake and the tidal wave and the nuclear meltdown in Japan was because they practice false religion there, and Jesus got pissed off. Who said that? It's not one of these. Oral Roberts' son, or was it Pat Robertson that said that? Did he? What a skank. Anyway, so guess what's going on in Texas? On On Monday, Governor Rick Perry, remember I told you he asked for federal aid? Please, Mr. Obama, help us out! No, you were going to secede from the union, punk. Secede. So he's asked for federal aid, and I think the despised federal government has sent some federal firefighters or something. I don't know. And yesterday, Perry declared this weekend, days of prayer for rain. Amen. That's right. He issued an official proclamation. Here's what it says. Whereas throughout our history, both as a state and as individuals, Texans have been strengthened, assured, and lifted up through prayer. It seems right and fitting that the people of Texas should join together in prayer to humbly seek an end to this devastating drought and all these dangerous wildfires. I, Rick Perry, Governor of Texas, under the authority vested in me by the Constitution and statutes of the state of Texas, do hereby proclaim the three-day period from Friday, April 22nd, 2011 to Sunday, April 24th, 2011 as days of prayer for rain in the state of Texas. I urge all Texans of all faiths and traditions to offer prayers on that day for the healing of our land, the rebuilding of our communities, and the restoration of our normal and robust way of life. Amen. God. You know, our governor down here, I remember, it was Kathy, 3 or 4 years ago when we were in the middle of a drought because of La Nina. Or, you know, weather patterns. And Sonny Perdue was the governor then, and he tried this little stunt, you know, after checking with the local weather people to see if there's even a chance. And when they said, well, there's always a chance, Gov, got everybody who was brain dead enough to do this to pray in the state of Georgia. Of course, nothing happened, but how is that explained? You didn't pray hard enough? You know, people are being eaten up with some horrible, hideous disease, and they're told, well, just pray, you'll be okay, God will say. And they pray, and they pray, and nothing happens. How's that explained? Your faith wasn't strong enough or something? This week in Texas, some parts are expected to remain dry and windy, so it's just going to keep on burning. And as CNN reports, time will tell if the prayers of Governor Perry and the people of Texas will be answered. Now, who's allowed to pray in Texas? What about all those Catholics that are undocumented visitors? Or as they say down in Texas, those illegal immigrant thugs that are stealing all our jobs. Do they get to pray? Is Rick asking them to pray? You know, they're Catholic, man. They got all these little statues and things and saints and you know, little gods and goddesses and stuff. And, you know, if all the Catholics got together, legal and illegal, don't you love that sound? Legal and illegal. If all the Catholics got together and just prayed up a mighty prayer, you suppose it might work? But Governor Perry, you know, he's just asking the citizens of the state of Texas. You know, what would be just devilish, wouldn't it, if the non-citizens of the state of Texas, you know, the illegal immigrants and everything, if they prayed for more dry weather and then see which team wins. What do you think? No, not a good idea. All right. I guess I should just butt out, right? If Governor Rick Perry, just like down here in Georgia a couple of years ago, if Governor Sonny Perdue wants to get people to pray for rain. All right, take a break, and we shall come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Plastic Jesus, I'll go far. More Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. The hour is sponsored by Hal Sparks. Thank you, Hal. From Mark, right here in the peanut state. Mike, I was listening to NPR today, can't remember which show, and they were talking about how NASA has stopped the manned space programs. They were very nonchalant in their announcement that the Obama administration is giving away $300 million to any company that wants to develop the next vehicle for manned spaceflight. When I heard this, my stomach started to twist into knots. My mind went back in time to when I was so proud to be an American, so proud when Apollo finally made it to the moon. Americans did this. Our support and taxes allowed NASA to create a relatively safe way for vehicles to take a person out of our atmosphere and back. Our society was developing something for the greater good of us all. It would revolutionize how we lived. I remember looking towards space exploration in the future with a naive wish to find other life forms in the galaxy other than us. Then I heard the NPR speaker ask his guest his opinion, and my mind went immediately to a replay of the movie Avatar. I see some greedy pig of a corporation doing exploration for their own avarice and profit. I see them destroying other planets, not just countries, in their quest for more garbage to sell to a very stupid public in the U.S. I feel completely sick that Obama doesn't feel this way or see how this very stupid decision is devolving our society. Next, my thoughts turn to anger at the fact that our society is full of these idiots who no longer care about anyone or anything but themselves. Obama has become a bigger disappointment to me than he'll ever imagine. At this point, the only way I could vote for Obama is if he first cancels all the payments to Halliburton, Blackwater, Xee, whatever they're called, and funnels some money back to NASA. He could probably support 10 NASAs with the money he wastes on the mercenaries. Mark in Georgia. I didn't know about the $300 million offer. Todd in Mundelein writes, Mike, so Rick Perry has asked for a 3-day prayer session for rain. Everybody of all faiths should pray, right? I'm just wondering, is he including Muslims? Someone should ask him that question. Watching his head explode might be entertaining. Right? No, of course not. They're only asking for Southern Baptists. From the land that evolution forgot, I got this from Bob. The Tennessee Senate has okayed a bill that would make it illegal to mention the existence of gay people to students. No, I'm not kidding. The Tennessee Senate Judiciary Committee has approved one lawmaker's revolutionary plan to fight the homosexual agenda. Don't tell students gay people exist until they go to high school. Who, the students or the gay? Oh, never mind. The Knoxville News Sentinel reports it this way. The measure, SB 49, is sponsored by Senator Stacey Campfield, Republican of Knoxville, who unsuccessfully pushed the same idea, nicknamed the Don't Say Gay Bill, for 6 years as a member of the state house before he was elected to the Senate. Why, of course. As introduced, the bill would have put into law a declaration that it is illegal to discuss any sexual behavior other than heterosexuality prior to the ninth grade. So they're going to leave out the sexual orientation of some of the founders of this country and some of the great military minds of the globe and artists and writers and poets and business people. And, oh, I see. You can talk about them. Just don't mention the gay part. The logic appears to be if young students aren't allowed to hear about homosexuality in school, then they won't hear about it anywhere. And then there will be no more gay people. And that's a good thing in Tennessee. Oh, my God. But the bill is actually worse than absurd. It's potentially very dangerous, as it would hamper efforts to prevent anti-gay bullying among students. If you can't say the word gay, how can you teach young people that bullying gay classmates is wrong? And how can you offer a lifeline to students who may be suffering at the hands of such bullying? But this is Tennessee. What's even more sad is the opposition to the bill in the state Senate focused not on the legislation being damaging and hateful and downright stupid, but rather on the fact that the bill might be redundant. Because when the bill came before the Senate Education Committee, Senator Jim Tracy, another Republican from Shelbyville, contended current law already prohibits such instruction by deeming it a misdemeanor to teach any sex education that is not part of the family life curriculum adopted by the State Board of Education. Tracy proposed an amendment to rewrite the original bill to require the Board of Education to study the issue and determine whether any teaching about homosexuality is occurring, and if so, recommend what should be done about it. Can you see them going from class to class? Are you being taught about homosexuality in here? No? Are you sure? Anybody in here being taught about homosexuality? How about anybody? Anybody here? Jesus Christ.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back to 25 before the hour. And the hour is sponsored, the hour is sponsored by Hal Sparks. You can hear Hal all over the place, but especially on Stephanie Miller's program. When's Hal on? Fridays? No, Wednesdays. Wonderful Wednesdays on Stephanie Miller. Hump Day with Hal. We have an update here for you. Where'd it go? An update on the crazed Christian in Detroit. Terry Jones, Rush Limbaugh's high school classmate. This just is crossing the wire. Pastor Terry Jones and an assistant were ordered to jail tonight after they refused to pay a $1 peace bond to hold a rally at the largest mosque in North America. This is according to the Detroit Free Press. After a two-day trial-like hearing seeking to get this permit, a jury sided with prosecutors and agreed that Jones would likely breach the peace with his planned rally outside the Islamic Center of America. Authorities argued that a riot could erupt. Prosecutors had estimated the cost of additional security at about $46,000, but the judge set the so-called peace bond at $1. What, was he broke? Jones, head of the fundamentalist Christian congregation in Gainesville, Florida, has gained notoriety for burning the Muslim holy book last week, leading to deadly riots in Afghanistan, including the killing of about 14 UN workers? You sick son of a bitch. I swear to God. During the hearing, Limbaugh's old classmate, Terry Jones, said that he and another pastor intended to protest jihad and Sharia law. Why don't you go? I mean, you're in Michigan, you half-witted moron. Why don't you go to somewhere in Saudi Arabia? Go over there and protest. Ah, that's where they practice, Cherie. You know what happened to you, Terry Jones? They would cut him off and hand him to you. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. We are not criminals, said Jones, dressed in faded blue jeans, a black Harley-Davidson T-shirt, and worn motorcycle jacket. All we want to do is exercise our First Amendment rights. Okay. I'm sure that there are some people in Dearborn who would like to show up at your rally and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Where did these people come from? Where did they come from? What kind of beast spews them out? Out of what kind of a belly do they crawl when the cocoon finally breaks? God. Oh, well. Hey, that's one of the fun things about living in a country like the United States. Hey, listen, the Republicans are having a bit of a problem convincing Americans to go off quietly and eat dirt and bark off of trees and, you know, go out and cut dandelion weeds to make a salad so that rich Americans can have yet another tax cut, according to what poll is this? Washington Post poll revealed that 72% of Americans support raising taxes on those with incomes over $250,000. And 79%, well, let me reverse it, only 21% support cutting spending on Medicare. And a McClatchy-Maris poll, McClatchy newspapers, even more eye-opening. In a McClatchy-Maris poll released this week, 70% of registered voters who identify with the Tea Party opposed making cuts to either Medicare or Medicaid to help reduce the nation's deficit. Meanwhile, only 28% of Tea Partiers said they'd be willing to cut spending on those two programs. Well, of course, 95% of the people who identify themselves as teabaggers receive Medicare or Medicaid and Social Security and all sorts of government-guaranteed retirement funds. Of course! What was that sign? U.S. government, keep your hands off my Medicare. Jesus, God. So I'll tell you what, Republicans, you sick sons of bitches, just keep on pushing that issue, okay? Just keep... Now they're spinning it, see? They're going to save Medicare. That's what Paul Ryan's talking about. They're going to save Medicare. No, they're not. They're going to absolutely murder it, if they can, and replace it with a voucher system? Replace it with... Where was that? Let me see here. Oh, Mohammed al-Baradei, the former chief UN nuclear inspector, says that Bush administration officials should face international criminal investigation for what happened in Iraq. Where is that... That's here someplace. I've just got to find it. Patients are not consumers. That's what it is. There it is. It's Krugman's column. Is this from today? He's talking about what the House Republicans propose is that the government simply push the problem of rising healthcare costs onto seniors. That is, we replace Medicare with vouchers that can be applied to private insurance. And that we can count on seniors and insurance companies to work it out together somehow. And it is just so sick. I mean, when you're given information that all of a sudden you have a major health crisis facing you that might even take your life. What are you supposed to do then? According to the Republicans, you're supposed to, quick, grab the Yellow Pages or something. Get on your iPhone, I don't know, and look up medical services, and then compare prices because, you know, you don't have Medicare anymore. Compare prices. Who's got the best deal? Oh, my God. Let's see. What do I have to have? I have to have my bladder taken out. Oh, all right. That's bad enough. But then they have to put something in there, some kind of prosthesis, and I got to have a hole. And, oh, God, what am I going to... That's precisely the time that the Republicans say, you should exercise your right as a well-informed consumer, a consumer, as to who you're going to call to get a new bladder? Oh, my God. They're insane. Republicans should be taken somewhere and locked up, every single one of them. Crucial decisions, like as Krugman says, life and death decisions have to be made about, you know, when you're dealing with medical care sometimes. Yet making such decisions intelligent requires a vast amount of specialized knowledge. Furthermore, those decisions often must be made under conditions in which the patient is incapacitated, under severe stress, or needs action immediately, with no time for discussion, let alone comparison shopping. I hate Republicans with a fiery intensity that transcends the human experience. Do you know that? Here's another Beck fan, makes it into the news, out in the state of Washington, Pullman, Washington. J.D. Hopp, that's his name, made his first appearance at federal court yesterday morning, where he entered a not guilty plea on a federal weapons charge that could carry a 10-year prison term if convicted. FBI agents are looking at what kind of leads can be generated from the evidence seized Wednesday. What'd they get? They got they got all sorts of hate information, hate pamphlets and books. You know, it's another one of these white racist crazy bastards. Vanguard News Network Forum and Stormfront. You know, this is where this freak posts, right? But apparently, he was getting ready to do something terrible. Additional federal charges, it says here, might be on the horizon. Hopp could be facing charges from the Pullman police. Following the federal search of his properties, the Pullman Police Department executed two additional search warrants on his trailer and his barn. I cannot read some of this stuff. That I can't read it over the air. It's just too sick. All of it misspelled. You know, stuff that he'd written and some of his racist buddies wrote. Anyway, another Beck fan gets caught at this rate. Eventually, I guess, they'll all either self-destruct or get caught and decent people will destroy him or something. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Don't need to be teaching no biology. You'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. And pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood. I'm with the God Squad, there's no place to run. I'm paving the
Here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Hal Sparks. You can hear him on, all over the place, where he does stand-up comedy or Queer as Folk or what, you know. Hal's always working. Or on the Stephanie Miller Show. On, was it Wonderful Wednesday? No, was it called? Hump Days with Hal. Hump Days with Hal. That's a little bit different from Wonderful Wednesdays. Yeah, Hump Days with... Yeah. Thank you, Hal. This is one of those stories that would make Rush Limbaugh almost as happy as when he does drugs. It's a heartbreaker for me. It's from Connecticut. Authorities in that state have filed theft charges against a woman named Tanya McDowell. She's homeless, alleging that she used a false address to enroll her son in a higher income school district. I don't know what that means, higher income. If you're homeless, anything is higher income, isn't it? The the newspaper, the Stanford Advocate, reports if she's convicted, Tanya McDowell may end up in jail for as many as 20 years. 20. It's not a misprint. 20 years. And a $15,000 fine for the crime. Ms. McDowell is a homeless single mother from Bridgeport, Connecticut, who used to work in food services, is now at the center of one of the very few false address cases in the Norwalk, Connecticut school district that's being handled in criminal court rather than between the parent and the school. Authorities are accusing this woman of enrolling her 5-year-old son in nearby Norwalk schools by using the address of a friend. Molly. Her friend has also been evicted from public housing for letting Ms. McDowell use her address. You get this? Ms. McDowell says she stayed in a Norwalk homeless shelter sometimes, but she didn't register there, which would have made her son eligible to attend the school. She's 33 years old. She told the newspaper, quote, "I had no idea whatsoever that if you enroll your child in another school district, it becomes a crime," end quote. An education advocacy group, Connecticut Parents Union. Connecticut Parents Union. You might want to look them up online. I don't have the web address. Is holding a fundraiser to help Ms. McDowell pay the possible fine. It's similar to the headline-making story of an Ohio mom, Kelly Williams Bowler, who spent days in jail after using her father's address to send her kids to a better performing school. Education writer Joanne Jacobs said of this case, quote, "One woman has been evicted here in Connecticut. Another could go to jail, and all because a little boy went to school in a district where he sometimes lives." My God. An attorney in Norwalk, Connecticut told the newspaper, quote, "I'm surprised that this is the case that Norwalk officials chose to make an example of." 33-year-old woman. I mean, how do you explain this one to your 5-year-old son? You know, I mean, what the hell is wrong? What the hell is wrong in this country? What in the hell is wrong here on Good Friday, 2011? And a mother who happens to be homeless enrolls her kid in a school in the district where the homeless shelter is located. Figure that one out. And she's now facing 20 years in prison. And a $15,000 fine. This goddamn country stinks. Do you know that? That we do that to people. That makes this country just absolutely a collapsed, useless pile of debris. That's what we've become. That's what we've become. We have a 22-year-old kid in prison because he told the truth. We have a woman facing 20 years in jail because you registered her 5-year-old. God! I'm going to have to calm down and take a break. Well, we got a break coming up. I happen to have a 6-year-old, and I can just imagine, you know, saying to my 6-year-old, guess what, honey? Daddy is going to go to prison now. Daddy has to pay a $15,000 fine now. Daddy's going to have to go into court now because I tried to get you in school. Unbelievable. I don't know. I just don't know how to deal with that. So I'm not even going to try. Have you got more than 30 seconds worth of music? You don't. Okay. Well, then I guess we'll sit here because I'm blown away. I mean, I can't handle stuff like this. I really can't. We need to take a break. We need to take a break and get out of this for a few minutes. We'll be back. Stay with us. This hour is sponsored by Lindy in Newark, California. Hi, Lindy. Lindy writes, I'm happy and proud to sponsor an hour of the best progressive radio in the air. Here's to many more years, if you can possibly stand it, that is. Well, I can't stop working, Lindy, because I didn't plan my financial life right. So, no, that's not really the reason I continue to do this. I do it because I don't know why. Anyway, Lindy in Newark, California, thank you. Happy and proud to sponsor an hour of the best progressive radio on the air. That's kind. Here's to many more years if you can possibly stand it. Yeah, I think so. Thanks, Lindy. We're getting closer. Don't open the lines now. We're getting closer to taking some phone calls tonight, so that should keep you all excited. And at the bottom of this hour, podcast trivia. I have right here in my hand the question and the answer. And if you get the answer right, you will win a one-year subscription to the Molloy Program podcast downloads, commercial-free, in your mailbox, I guess, every morning. And then you can put it on any device you want to. You can even put it on a pen like this one I'm holding in my hand that probably plays something. Now, here's the way to go. This is what to do. Unions representing, this is in Florida, unions down there representing Florida teachers, firefighters, police and other government workers are pulling an estimated $10 million from five banks affiliated with the Florida Chamber of Commerce because of the Chamber of Commerce's attack on public employees. The unions are also asking their members, an estimated 20,000 people, to withdraw their personal money from Bank of America, PNC Bank, Regions Bank, SunTrust, and Wachovia. And labor leaders across the state could follow in the coming weeks, union officials say. Executives from the banks in question sit on Florida Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. And the chamber has pushed legislation that would prohibit state and local governments from collecting union dues through payroll deductions. Now, see, these are the same kind of corporate sons of bitches who have no problem, like, was it Koch Industries that sent a notice to all their employers on who to vote for, right? But the unions in Florida are fighting back. Supporters say it's called the Paycheck Protection Act. You notice how they the legislatures of these various states that are now under the control of the Stalinists, you notice how they destroy language in the process of just, hell, just going to the bathroom, they destroy language. So it's called the Paycheck Protection Act. It's a union-busting effort, labor-busting effort, that would make it more difficult for unions to operate. The Florida Chamber of Commerce has lobbied lawmakers in support of the legislation. You know, why isn't the Chamber of Commerce minding its own goddamn business? Just go about what you do well, Chamber of Commerce. Go out and figure out more ways to rip off the public. Leave the union workers alone. Why don't you do that? Go figure out, go invent some new instruments that you can sell to the gullible, because you know that the union members and the non-union members will bail your asses out after you've ripped us off again, you filthy pigs, huh? But leave the union workers alone. Go work out a plan. Go do what you do. What you do is destroy the economic system in the United States. Just go do it. Edie Owsley, a spokeswoman for the Florida Chamber of Commerce, said, quote, "It's a shame that unions have dragged banks into their political games. This just goes to show how desperate they are to keep the union gravy train." I'm going to go off again here in a minute. "By using the state of Florida to collect union dues. Frankly, we expected these bullying tactics a long time ago." And after she said that, her horns came back out and her tail grew. And she went over behind a palm tree down there where there was a portal to hell, and she jumped back in. Can you believe this? Of course you can. This is the United States of America, 2011. So I'll ask again and again and again. How much more of this are we going to take before we end this madness and replace it with a system that is fair, just, lawful, humanist, compassionate? You know, it is up to us. The Koch brothers and the Chamber of Commerce types and these Stalinist governors, like the ones that exist now in Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin, all the states where they're Oklahoma, Arizona, you know, go right down the list. All these Stalinist governors who are doing everything they can to break the back for once and for all of what we used to lovingly call middle-class America, right? And the Chamber of Commerce, these dumb sons of bitches, do they not realize that the only reason there is a middle class on which the banksters can prey, on which the banksters can rip and cheat and steal and lie and connive, and that middle class, that huge, huge pool of money, trillions of dollars, is only there because of the efforts of organized labor going back over 80 years. It's only there for these bank bastards to steal and cheat and lie because millions of workers have gone out and earned a living and put it in banks. I don't know why anybody deals with a bank at all. They are predators. They're like what Matt Taibbi called, they're like blood-sucking vampire squids that just latch onto your face and start sucking everything out of you. Why do you deal with a bank? Why? Go to a credit union. I think I'm too pissed off to do the program tonight. But there's nothing we can do about it, right? It's not like working a radio station where I could get some intern to come in or somebody who works midnight to three and say, hey, could you step in for me tonight? Because I am so furious. Well, I've got some good news for you when we come back after this break. And it's the kind of good news that has the potential of being great news. I don't know if it'll turn the corner, you know, from good news to great news, but I'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Before I get to the good news, Jesus, I don't believe this. This is from another one from Michigan. Why, sure. Michael and Roswell sent this in. There's a state senator there, Bruce Caswell. Yeah. Of course he's a Republican. Bruce Caswell. And he has an idea. According to this state senator, foster children in Michigan, foster children, people placed with adults for various reasons, foster children in Michigan should use their state-funded clothing allowance only in thrift stores. Senator Caswell says he wants to make sure that state money set aside to buy clothes for foster children and kids of the working poor is actually used for that purpose. He says that these kids should get gift cards to be used only at Salvation Army, Goodwill, or other thrift stores. Caswell says, quote, I never had anything new. I got all the hand-me-downs, and my daddy did a lot of shopping in the Salvation Army, and his comment was, and quite frankly, it's true, once you're out of the store and you walk down the street, nobody knows where you bought your clothes. Yeah, and look how you turned out, you grizzly-looking bastard. You ought to see this guy's picture. Oh, my God. Gilda Jacobs, CEO of the Michigan League for Human Services. She's not a big fan of the thrift shop gift card idea. She says, honestly, I was flabbergasted. I really couldn't believe this because I think, gosh, is this where we've gone in this state? I think that there's the whole issue of dignity. You're saying to somebody, you don't deserve to go in and buy a new pair of gym shoes. You know, for a lot of foster kids, they already have so much stacked against them. Of course, the gift card idea wouldn't save the state a dime. It would save the state zero. So why is he doing it? Because he's an evil son of a bitch who deserves to burn in hell. That's why. Look at his picture. Oh, my God. Where do these devils come from? I mean, just out of hell portals. They just come bouncing up out of hell portals, don't they? I mean, that's the only explanation. I mean, they're not of human union, you know. They're not a result of intercourse between two human beings or insemination or whatever. And then out pops a devil like this Caswell bastard? No, 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 no. Foster children should be forced to get their clothes in the Goodwill store. Now, we buy a lot of clothing in secondhand shops. Kathy and I use consignment stores a lot, especially for children's clothing, because kids grow like weeds. But you know what? We do it as a choice. And our daughter is not in foster care. Where does this stuff come from? Dear God, where does this come from? Evil, meanness. I can remember years ago when Limbaugh was in his active drug addict phase, where he would make fun of people like this, and kids, and old people, and homeless people. He would laugh every time he picked up a paper and blabbed it on his filthy radio program about another homeless person being burned alive or something. He would just laugh his ass off. Funny stuff, right, Rush? Woman is it Connecticut? No, not Connecticut. Where's that story that I started with tonight? Enroll homeless woman, 33 years old with a 5-year-old, enrolls him in a school that she sometimes is lives in the district because of the homeless shelter is there. But this time she used a friend's address in the projects nearby, and she's facing 20 years in prison. Yeah, Connecticut. And here's this evil son of a bitch, this Michigan State Senator. Look at his picture. You'll have to look it up yourself. I posted a link here on the Malloy chat on Ustream. Okay, let's give your humble and obedient servant a break. When we come back, I'm not whining. I really am not. When we come back, podcast trivia. So Kathy's going to open up the lines. Now, this is just for podcast trivia players, okay? We'll get to real phone calls later. 877-996-2556. Go ahead. Call in. welcome back. It is time for podcast trivia. As we are wont to do on Fridays when we're here. Some of these podcast trivia subscriptions come from Sean. I think we're still working on Sean's. He wrote, I'm donating 12 Malloy podcasts with a call to engineers and scientists to join me in boycotting corporations. Engineers, scientists, and all experts in the technical trades, please join me in boycotting. Don't let your hard work and intellectual efforts go to big corporations who are destroying the country. Sean. I hear that, Sean. All right. Let me see. Well, it looks like Connie in Seaside, California, listening on KXRA. Hi, Connie.
Hi. Mike, I've been trying forever to get a hold of you. This is just great.
Well, here you are.
I know. I can't believe it.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. All you have to do is get the right answer, and you get a whole year's supply of
Oh, God. Thank you, Sean. I hope I win.
Podcast downloads, commercial-free, and all kinds of good stuff. All right. Start the music, maestro. Start the music that makes everybody tense. Here we go. No, not that music.
Not that one.
There we go. All right, Connie, here we go.
Yes.
Nevada Senator John Ensign announced yesterday he will resign his Senate seat on May 3rd. The reason, A, he is the subject of a Senate ethics investigation. B, he admitted to a sexual affair with the wife of his former chief of staff and best friend. C, his family arranged a $100,000 payoff to the cuckolded husband, ostensibly for his silence. D, he is a liar. Or E, all of the above.
E, all of the above.
That's, okay, you got it.
I don't believe it. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Sean.
You got it. I have to admit that that wasn't the toughest question we ever put out there, but you won!
I did. I won. Mike, can I just please ask you one question?
Sure.
I got through.
Yes.
Mike, I have one question. You've really opened up my eyes. I love listening to you and all of that, but it all boils down to one question.
Yeah?
Why do you live in the South, man? You put yourself through so much torture.
I don't know.
You don't know either.
I don't know.
You don't know why you stay with the job, and you don't know why you stay in the South. Huh?
I've been here for so long. I first moved here in 1970, and you know, 41 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of good friends in the South. There are liberals in the South. There are progressives in the South.
I mean, do they hide under rocks or what?
No, they just stay close to Atlanta.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, Connie. And
thank you.
Kathy will get the pertinent information. Thank you, Connie. Oh, I didn't mention. Lindy in Newark, California. Is the sponsor of this hour. And she has a message here. I'm happy and proud to sponsor an hour of the best progressive radio on the air. Here's to many more years, if you can possibly stand it, that is. Lindy in Newark, California. Thanks, Lindy. Oh, yeah, I'll stay with this until they pry the microphone from my cold, dead fingers. Ooh, I don't know why I'm saying this out. A lot of people ask me that. I guess it's just, you know, you get used to swimming against the tide. Being here has been real career busters for me. You know, being a liberal in the South where it concerns radio. Of course, being a liberal where it concerns radio any place. You know, ask Bob Kincaid at the Horn. He'll tell you the same thing. To be a liberal in radio usually means that you're going to do it yourself. You're going to set up, you know, you've got to have balls of steel to do that. I'm serious. This is a difficult business at best. But Bob Kincaid does. And then there's several other people who do basically the same thing. We're not, you know, we don't have any backing. Nothing. No corporation. No radio station. No network. We have a network that distributes the program, Dial Global, but, you know, a network in the sense of coming with the money when you need it. So, and a lot of that is from living here. Bob Kincaid lives in West Virginia, and he fights against the tide 24/7. I mean, constantly. You know, when I met him and his family last winter on that Progressive Voices cruise that they took us on, you meet a family like that, real nice people. Oh, my God, two daughters, a son, husband, wife, and you realize what he does and where he's doing it. I mean, that's pretty scary. You know, I can hide. I lived in an armed compound. But Bob lives down there in West Virginia and takes on the sons of bitches constantly. But that's just the way it goes. You just do it because, I don't know, you do it because you do it. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? But, I found this to be true so many times. I meet the few liberals that I have met in this business, the ones that are married and have families, they're stable. They have great kids. Their spouses are very supportive. I'm not saying they walk on water, but I'm just saying. And then you meet the right wing talk show hosts. They're all liars. They've been married, 1,000 times. They cheat. They steal. They stink. Speaking of stinking, let me share something with you here. Tim in L.A. has sent me. You want to see the picture of the guy in Michigan, the state senator who has decided it'd be a good idea for foster children. What's next, you rotten son of a bitch? What are you going to do next, orphans? Foster children have to buy their clothing in used clothing stores. If you want to see this slug's picture, go to tinyurl.com. That's what you type in, www.tinyurl.com/Republicans stink. Tim set that up for you. tinyurl.com/Republicans stink. And take a look at this guy's picture. You tell me if this is not some hawk-billed demon that just rose out of hell just to do this. tinyurl.com. That's the website. /Republicans stink. Thanks, Tim. Oh, God. tinyurl.com/Republicans stink. Did I mention Lindy in Newark, California? Yeah, I did. Thanks, Lindy. All right, the good news. Former UN chief nuclear inspector Mohammed al-Baradei is suggesting in a new book, a memoir, that Bush administration officials should face international criminal investigation for what he calls, quote, the shame of a needless war, end quote, in Iraq. He's a Nobel Prize winning Egyptian. He accuses U.S. leaders of, quote, grotesque distortion, end quote, in the run up to the 2003 Iraq invasion, when Bush and his gang of murderers claimed Iraq possessed doomsday weapons, right? Despite contrary evidence collected by al-Baradei and other arms inspectors inside the country. Al-Baradei writes in The Age of Deception, that's the name of the book, that the Iraq War taught him that, quote, deliberate deception was not limited to small countries ruled by ruthless dictators. The book is being published Tuesday coming, I believe, by Henry Holton Company. He was the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, from 1997 to 2009, and recently a rallying figure in Egypt's revolution. He concludes his 321-page account of two decades of, quote, tedious, wrenching, end quote, nuclear diplomacy with a plea for more of it, particularly in the efforts to rein in North Korea and Iranian nuclear ambitions. He writes that all parties must come to the negotiating table. But when he talks about the Bush crime family and the drive for war in 2002 and 2003. Back when Al Baradei and Hans Blix, remember him, led teams of UN inspectors looking for signs of Saddam Hussein's government had revived nuclear, chemical, or biological weapons programs, which they had done nothing of the sort. He tells, let's do this break and we'll come back, because I've got some of the stuff out of the book right here. I hold it in my hand right here. So we'll take a break here and come back and pick up on this. Stay with us. Because I want you to hear this. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour has been sponsored by Lindy in Newark, California. Thank you, Lindy. She writes, I'm happy and proud to sponsor an hour of the best progressive radio in the air. Here's to many more years, if you can possibly stand it, that is. Well, those are kind words. Thank you, Lindy. I appreciate it. Appreciate the sponsorship, too. Back to Al Baradei, Muhammad Al Baradei's book, The Age of Deception, being published Tuesday by Henry Holt and Company. And he feels that the Bush administration official should face international criminal investigation for what he calls the shame of a needless war. No kidding. Anyway, he tells of an October 2002 meeting. Remember, the invasion didn't happen until early 2003. But he had this meeting with Hans Blix. And at the meeting, Secretary of State Colin Powell, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, and others, at which the Americans tried to convert the UN mission into a cover for what would be, in essence, a United States-directed inspection process. Oh, the rotten sons of bitches. They knew there were no weapons, you see, so they wanted to get the UN out of the way. We'll conduct it. I'll bet they would have found something, too, huh? The UN officials resisted, said no, and their teams went on to conduct some 700 inspections of scores of potential weapon sites in Iraq, finding no evidence to support the U.S. claims of weapons of mass destruction. Have they found any yet? Al Baradei cites examples, including the conclusion by his inspectors inside Iraq, that certain aluminum tubes that were discovered were designed for artillery rockets, not for uranium enrichment equipment to build nuclear bombs, as the Bush crime family insisted. Al Baradei reported this conclusion to the UN Security Council January 27, 2003, and yet the next day, Bush, in what Al Baradei calls a remarkable response, Bush the next day delivered a State of the Union address in which he repeated the lie about aluminum tubes. They knew what it was for. You remember the aluminum tubes thing? Similar contradictions of expert findings occurred with the claim, based on a forgery, a CIA forgery, that Iraq had bought uranium from Niger. Remember that? The Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame thing, remember? And an Iraqi exile's fabrication that Mobile Labs were producing biological weapons. That was, what was that guy's name? Curveball. Remember that? Remember the outing of Valerie Plame? Who went to prison for that? And why is Bradley Manning sitting in jail? Why isn't that son of a bitch Dick Cheney in prison? El Baradei writes that the official U.S. attitude before the March 2003 invasion, which he calls aggression where there was no threat, he says, I was aghast at what I was witnessing. He says he accepts estimates that hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians were killed. This is a bloody goddamn country. Do you know that our religion, they keep saying this is a Christian nation. The religion is bloody. The foreign policy is bloody. The domestic policy is bloody. He suggests that the world court should be asked to rule on whether the war was illegal. Well, no kidding. And if so, quote, should not the International Criminal Court investigate whether this constitutes a war crime and determine who's accountable, end quote. Now, we all know that there are formidable political and legal barriers that would seem to rule out an investigation like this, right? Because, you're dealing with the United by God States of America and all the right-wing monsters that live here. But El Baradei, citing the war crimes prosecution of Serbia's Slobodan Milosevic, sees double standards.
Really?
That should end. He asked, do we, as a community of nations, have the wisdom and courage to take the corrective measures needed to ensure that such a tragedy, the invasion and murder of hundreds of thousands, will never happen again? You want a quick answer, Mr. El Baradei? Wisdom in the United States? Courage in the United... Who do we invade? Who do we attack? Panama? Vietnam? Iraq? Courage? That's not courage. That's aggression. That's psychopathology. That's greed. That's murder. It's a million things, but it's not courage. Now, I'm not busting the warrior. I'm busting the war. It wasn't so long ago I stood with a bunch of veterans protesting these wars. Fight the war, not the warrior. And if that sounds kind of schizophrenic to you, just think about it. I realize that there are some people who join the military who are just Class A murderers and want an excuse to do it legally. But that's the exception, not the rule. I don't know why, but this program tonight is just... It's like having ants in your sleeping bag when you're out in the woods somewhere, you know what I'm saying? Or scorpions. All right, we have a break here. Third and final hour coming up, and we will take some phone calls this last hour. So if you're still listening, if you're still out there, stick around. Give us a call. The number 877-996-2556. Stay with us. 7 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Black. Well, his first name is Don. Black. His message to Jewel E. For a third of a century together, most of them legal. Thanks for helping Mike keep it lit. Signed, Black. Thank you, Black. To Julie, for a third of a century together, most of them legal. Thanks for helping Mike keep it lit, Black. Well, that's intriguing. I'd like to know more about that. Real quick here, and then we're going to go to your phone calls. This is from Kathy, who is in Hawaii. Kauai, Hawaii. I've heard that in the Hawaiian language, you're supposed to pronounce every letter or syllable. I don't know. Don't explain it to me. It's too late at night. Anyway, Kathy in Hawaii writes, Mike, I grew up in Holland, Michigan. Yes, the home of the Prince of Blackwater, with a church on every corner and a tulip on every porch, a nice town with a lovely Lake Michigan shoreline nearby. I've been following the story of the takeover of Benton Harbor by the emergency financial managers to create their high-end development, Harbor Shores, as so well covered by Rachel Maddow. And then she sent me a couple of links about this. She goes on, I have friends in Michigan. I'm sure they consider themselves to be upper middle class. They felt that taking over Benton Harbor was an okay thing because it was a crime-ridden, poverty-stricken group of minority people who don't deserve a nice beach park like that anyway. But now something is sitting in the backyard of these comfortable middle-class Michiganders. I recently caught wind of a similar takeover happening in a quaint little summertime tourist town in Michigan called Saugatuck. Saugatuck is surrounded by pristine forests and beaches and dunes, still one of my favorite spots on Earth. Not for long. Aubrey McClendon has big plans for Saugatuck. Saugatuck has the public boat launch and public park and public docks where people tie up their boats and go have dinner after having cruised out through the public harbor access into Lake Michigan for a lovely sunset cruise. I wonder how they'll feel if Aubrey McClendon and his friends have their way. Aubrey McClendon? He is the owner of Chesapeake Energy, one of the largest natural gas companies in the U.S., and in 2008 was the highest paid CEO at all S&P 500 companies. His company is involved in hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, for natural gas. McClendon is also a developer. He's been deeply embroiled in legal fights with Saugatuck Township, about 45 miles to the north of Benton Harbor. After McClendon purchased a large tract of dune land there, the township rezoned the area, making it impossible for him to develop it into a condo recreation mecca similar to Harbor Shores. So now Saugatuck Township, home of the stunning Saugatuck Dunes, is beginning to worry about bankruptcy due to the lawsuits from Aubrey McClendon. If they go into bankruptcy, they become vulnerable to, yep, an emergency financial manager. And if that happens, what's going on in Benton Harbor to ease the process of handing over prime real estate to wealthy and powerful developers for their own economic enrichment could happen in the beautiful Saugatuck Dunes as well. And these old friends of mine who are worried about Saugatuck and their ability to continue to enjoy it freely with their boats, yep, Republicans. Aloha. Kathy in Hawaii. Thanks, Kathy. Last thing, in talking about the Bush crime family and war crimes, so on and so forth, email from somebody who sent me the link. The president president and commander-in-chief, Barack Obama, says that Bradley Manning, accused military whistleblower, broke the law. Yeah, Obama's already convicted him. This is what Obama said when the story came out. Quote, so people can have philosophical views about Bradley Manning, but I can't conduct diplomacy on an open source basis. That's not how the world works. And if you're in the military, and I have to abide by certain rules of classified information, if I were to release material I weren't allowed to, I'd be breaking the law. We're a nation of laws. We don't let individuals make their own decisions about how the laws operate. He broke the law. Really? He broke the law. Is that a draft? I don't have the audio here. I'm trusting the website that has this up. We're a nation of laws. We don't let individuals make their own decisions about how the laws operate. Are you freaking kidding me? After what we went through with 8 years of Bush and Cheney, and the President of the United States now says that Bradley Manning broke the law? What laws, Mr. President? He's been charged with about 8 different things. What laws? Aiding and abetting the enemy? What enemy? Treason? What treason? What laws? Or no, Obama keeps it in the singular. He broke the law. What law? Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's a basis for Manning's attorney to seek a change of venue. Where in the hell could he go? I know. How about Egypt? All right, phone calls. Julie. Julie is in Mobile, yes. Alabama. Hey, Julie.
Hello. Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. I just wanted to let you know that there are still, you know, there are some liberals here in the South.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know. I know a lot of them. Are you kidding me?
I caught the tail end of that section a while back. As I was getting in my car to go somewhere, and I wanted to tell you that we are out here, you know, we're crazy people, of course, you know,
yeah.
In the South. And,
well, maybe you didn't hear the first part, because somebody had asked me, you know, why I continue to live in Georgia. And, you know, I don't have a good answer. I've just been here for 40 years. But, you know, most of the people, well, all the people that I hang, no, I can't say that. Most of the people I hang out with, a good 90%, are liberal or progressive or, you know, some of them are the old style blue dog Democrat, but not in a bad way. I mean, they talk about blue dog Democrats sometimes around the country in a negative way. But so I mean, I know if I hadn't developed these friendships over the last 25 years, say, or 30 years, I probably wouldn't be here. I mean, you know, the only thing that keeps you rooted is, you know, your friends and the people that you connect.
Your family.
Yeah, family and friends and whatever you do, you know, I mean, the places you go, things you're used to doing, your groups and your people and your posse, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I know.
Right.
I know, Julie. I know there are a lot of liberals in the South. It's just that so often we have to keep our heads down.
Yeah. I grew up in a large family, and we are liberals, and it was really funny during the early 2000 whatever, when it was, you know, you are not patriotic if you spoke out against baby Bush,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
you were bad. And for me, I've always been proud of, yes, I am liberal.
Mm-hmm.
I am proud to be liberal. You may look at it as a bad word, but that's your problem.
There you go.
I am liberal because I am a humanitarian, and that's it.
I hear you.
And being in Alabama, that really is a challenge.
It is.
I still have my Obama 08 sticker on my car.
Oh, my God.
I refuse to take it off.
You got a lot of courage, Julie. Hey, listen, thanks for checking in. Call us again, all right?
Yeah, okay. I really enjoyed listening to you. I just found you the last few days because I'm not in my car anymore.
Well,
good to hear you.
Well, thanks, Julie. Take care. We'll be right back.
Repair.
stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
The hour, Kauai. I was trying to pronounce the name of the town in Hawaii, or the city that Kathy lives in. Sent me an email about Michigan. Mike, not that it matters, but it's pronounced Kauai with a short A in the K-A, like Kaka poo poo. Kauai. There you go. That's funny, like kaka poo poo. Where are we? John is in Atlanta listening on XM. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. I just want to give you a quick compliment real fast here. I like to listen to you. And I know you may not like it, but I like to listen to Michael Savage. And the reason why is because I think both of you guys are like I honestly really feel your guys' your angst, your pain.
I would hate to listen to someone where I had to feel their pain too. Jesus.
Well, I mean, you feel real, you know?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, like you're not faking it.
Well, I would hate to get into, since you listen to both programs, I'm certainly not going to get into some kind of a weird discussion with you about Michael Savage. I think you know what I think about, his points of view. Especially when he goes after, people who are defenseless. That's one difference, I think, between people on the few of us who are liberals or progressives in talk radio. On the one hand, on the other hand, the vast, just humongous majority of talk radio people who are on the right or the neo-fascist right or what have you. Here's the big difference. On the left, we don't attack people that can't defend themselves. We don't go after mothers who are homeless and try to get their kid in a school and wind up facing jail time.
Well,
little kids, in elementary or middle school or high school who happen to be gay and are attacked on a daily basis. That.
I was trying to say really, like, they go more, it's like they're just doing it for a check,
That what?
Like, they're just doing it for a paycheck.
What, people like Savage?
No, I hate to say it, but like Rush Limbaugh, it just seems to me.
Well, I would disagree, John. I think Limbaugh believes, he is so sick in the head, like any sociopath, he believes everything that he says. I mean, Hitler believed everything. George Bush believed everything, no matter how many times he was proven wrong. There's a book you really ought to read that I'm reading, and a lot of people I've discovered are reading this right now. It's Political Ponerology is the title of it. P-O-N-E-R-ology. Ponerology. It's a weird word. I'd never come across it before. But, this book was written in the 80s, and, it was written by, a Polish guy. I'm drawing a blank on his name. Shevsky. What's his last name? It doesn't matter. Don't anybody email it to me. But
well, anyway, the reason why I wanted to call, though, was I heard it on NPR. They were talking about Paul Ryan budget.
Right.
And they said, it was a lot of severe cuts, in his budget.
Right.
To Medicare. Making it a voucher program and raising Social Security to 75.
Mm-hmm.
And like I myself, I've got, diabetes and, I ain't gonna make it to 75.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I don't think in our current situation, I know this is a big problem, our economics, but me and you are going to solve it. I think there's no way to cut and there's no way to tax our way out of this.
Oh, there is. There's a very simple way. Very, very simple way. And it doesn't require a genius for this, John. Here's all you have to do. Where it concerns Social Security, you raise the age of, you raise the income level. Right now, people only pay FICA taxes up to, I think, $109,000 a year. If you make beyond that, you don't pay any more FICA tax. So somebody, who makes $300,000 a year is going to pay exactly the same as somebody who makes $109,000 a year. That is inherently unfair. That's A. Here's B. Make the corporations pay taxes. They don't have to pay 50%. They don't have to pay 40%. They don't have to pay 30%. Make the sons of bitches pay at least 20% of their profits. So many of these companies, like General Electric, like Bank of America, they pay nothing. You pay more taxes. I don't know what you do, John, but you pay more in for your 2010 earnings than General Electric paid because they didn't pay a damn dime. So
yeah,
there is a way to solve this. And
but I don't really like wait, to harp they're, on they're, that, you know, because well, they use that as a weapon against Obama, you know, sitting there saying, oh, he's all friends with him, you know. But, you know, I'm sure during the Bush years that, you know, there were companies that were all chummy with him that weren't paying no taxes.
Oh, sure,
you know.
Sure. No, this has been going on forever, John. I'm not suggesting this is Obama's plan at all. This has been going on forever. Listen, I got to take a break here. I'll come back and talk about this a little bit more. John, thanks. I appreciate you checking in.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Black Black. I'd like to know more about that. To Jewel E. For a third of a century together, most of them legal. Thanks for helping Mike keep it lit. Signed, Black Black. Black Black. Black Black. Okay. Claudia is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Claudia. Where's Claudia? All right, let me put that one back on hold. Steven in Burbank. Hello, Steven.
Hi, Mike. Connie, the podcast winner, asked you why you live in the South. It reminded me that you asked me once, why do I talk to right-wingers? And the answer to that is, well, it's the feedback you get. You know, you get the most amazing things. There's a documentary from the Pacifica Foundation called The New American Century by Massimo Mazzucco. And I handed it to one of these guys, and I said, if you can find anything in that documentary that is a lie, I will buy you a beer. And what happened was, I asked him about it, he saw it, and he said, it's biased. And I thought, what? It's biased? And look, Mike, it was pure enlightenment.
Right. Well, that's what right-wingers and, you know, I found that religious fundamentalists say that, right-wing political people say it, people who don't understand, or not people don't understand because you speak English and you're probably speaking to an English speaker. It's people who cannot entertain the idea that what they've been told by the leaders in their community, whether it's their church, their synagogue, their school, their place of business, whatever, that all of it was a lie, and they can't handle that. So yeah, they'll defend with everything they have, and the way they defend is say, well, that's biased, or you know, that's not a balanced point of view, as if their point of view was unbiased or balanced.
Well, here's what's cool. Here's the synthesis.
Yeah,
the truth is always biased in favor of the truth. What? And the truth is always biased in favor of the truth. You look up the definition, it shows curve. It shows a tendency to lean towards. It's like even Martin Luther King Jr. said it, you know, the universal is curved. It moves in that thing. And here's another neat thing. In the New American Century, there is a reverse negative film of the military brass. The big generals and admirals, and they're at a meeting. Mm-hmm. All of the fruit salad, all of the ribbons and the medals, yeah, they're on the right side of the breast. And if he would have said, look, you know, that the fruit salad is on the left side of the breast, here's on the right, I would have bought him a beer. And he did not notice that.
Okay, now I know there's a point to your telling me this, Stephen.
Well, you observe, you look, you compare, you look at the reality.
I see.
Look at, and you find, hey, wait a second, look at that. You know, that ain't real.
I got
you. The fruit salad's supposed to be on the other side. Just nuance everything.
Yeah. All right.
I'm running out of gas, Mike.
You're running out of gas?
Yeah. It's just what, well, I have more to go if you want me to.
No, that's all right.
Okay. I'll save it for another time, maybe.
That sounds good. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, bye.
All right. Take care. Did he mean he was driving around running out of gas, or running out of gas about what to say, or I don't know. Stephen always has something to say, though. Stephen ought to have his own talk program or something. David is in St. Paul listening on KTNF. Hey, David.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you here. Hey, I'm just wondering, I just want to put a plug out there for Happy Earth Day for everyone.
Hey, thank you.
I also want to see, Mike, have you seen these Exxon Mobil commercials lately?
I have not.
They have the perfect teacher teaching the perfect student, and they are saying how, you know, that perfect teacher can change the lives of these perfect students, and as Exxon Mobil, we support that. And I just have to look at that, Mike, and just say, it makes me want to vomit.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know. You know where these people live. They live in the mind of a graphic, I'm sorry, a commercial designer who through, I don't know, a century of learning how to influence people with images and sounds, and they present something like that is totally just so far removed from reality as north is from south. But you and I, I don't mean you and I specifically, but people look at that ad and they just get all dewy-eyed and wonder what all the screaming is about.
Yeah, and then, I have to look at the anti-union bills in Wisconsin,
sure,
and everywhere else.
Sure.
And, you know, and also not paying their taxes to be able to fund that education.
Right.
And funding these think tanks that denied, you know, put the skeptics out there for climate change.
Right. And yep. not only that, but having corporate predators and predatory capitalists ruin family life. Capitalism is the most antithetical system to family life anyway. It just destroys families. Most families eventually, because the capitalists eventually have to move on. They don't give a damn if there are 300 families working for a factory someplace in the Midwest when it's time to make more money and they're dealing with a union. They just say to hell with you and move to India. So, that's another thing left out of the commercial. That perfect,
yep,
little student who probably had a nice balanced breakfast and his vitamins and mom and dad had a cup of coffee and a scrambled egg and, then off he went to get on a beautiful clean school bus or better yet, mommy or daddy put him in the back of the, minivan and took him to school. This is just such nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. I'm not saying that there aren't people who do that, but the vast majority right now are people who don't do that. And it shows up in ask the teachers. Ask the workers. Are you still there? Or did we lose you? I think we lost him. But I get what you're saying. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mark is in San Francisco listening online. Hey, Mark.
Hi. Thank you, Mike.
Sure.
Mike, I foresee a possible problem for the opposition in Wisconsin with rescinding the anti-union laws. And this is it. As it is right now, the reactionary Supreme Court judge who is up against Koppenberg is he is now in the lead because of the shenanigans or whatever that was happening. I think it is in Washoe County. Now, the problem is if he gets if this stands, we know it will be a 4-3 vote, making legal the way that Walker got this thing passed. Now, I went to an answer forum a week or so ago, and it was very interesting. They had a lot of people there, and one of them was a young gentleman from SEIU in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. And I talked to him afterwards, and I said, you know, what did he think the chances are that this was going to stand, this vote? And he said 80%, very pessimistic. And then this new count. And then I asked him, I said, well, look, it's a bicameral legislature there. And so forth. Now, they might get a full 8 people on the ballot. They might actually change the Senate around. But they've done nothing on the assembly. And I asked him, I said, well, if this thing gets, you know, declared as legal law, you know, how in the world can you reverse it if you're just recalling the Senate? And he said, that could be a problem. But I didn't get it fully, and I'm asking some of your listeners to say, is it that you it's not legal to recall assembly members? Because if you get, even if you get the, if you get the Senate and you don't get their assembly, then the law will stand if this reactionary SOB, his vote, you know, he...
Well, yeah, it will.
So I don't understand. Is this an oversight? It can't be. I mean, what's going on?
I think with the effort put in to get Koppenberg on the Supreme Court, was eventually this law or this bill that was signed by the governor there, it will go, it will be tested legally. It'll it, and eventually it'll reach the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court will either rule that it's constitutional vis-a-vis Wisconsin's constitution or not. And I think the more progressive judge would have ruled, no, it's not constitutional. So that's why the election matters. I hope that answers your question. I've got to leave it there, Mark. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Baby, your love's sponsorship this past hour, and his message to Jewel E. For a third of a century together, most of those years legal. Thanks for helping Mike keep it lit. Black, black. Thank you. Appreciate it. And let me mention the people who contribute to this program. I haven't done it for a while. Our technical advisor, of course, White Rose Society, is Ben Birch. Military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Economic Affairs, Bruce Enberg. You know him as Prairie 2. Education, Kate Petrini. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf are the ethics advisors to this program. If I ever do anything like John Ensign did, they would probably tell me, all right, we're going to investigate you. And our engineer and executive producer is Kathy Bay. What does this mean? What are you doing? Good night. Is that what? No, no, we still have some time here, right? Claudia is in San Francisco. Usually by Friday this time, we are both just dragging ass so bad. Hey, Claudia.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I got you.
Oh, fantastic. I'm such a fan of both you and Kathy, and I call this Radio Free America. This is what this show is to me, Radio Free America.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
You know, I grew up during the Vietnam occupation. That's when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a real stickler for language, and I refuse to call any of these activities wars. Wars bring people to mind of defending your front door and your family. These are occupations.
Right, that's true.
They're aggressive, bully, and there's nothing, a yes, don't bite the warrior, but we should attack the people who encourage these. My husband's Pakistani, I just want to say that.
Mm-hmm.
He is a more staunch patriot you will never find of this country.
Right.
In fact, we have arguments at home. I'm just like, this is not what it's supposed to be.
That's so true. And, with people who move to a different country and then become a citizen, no matter what the country is, they become very, very loyal to that country.
Absolutely. And so I just want to encourage, and I do want to encourage people to continue to sponsor and support Mike Malloy and all his efforts to keep the fire burning. Also, one quick point. There's a wonderful poem by Langston Hughes called Let America Be America.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
It would be so cool to hear your voice read that. It would be so cool.
You know, I might do that sometime.
That'd be great. I'm just very, very attached to you and Kathy and your efforts, and I appreciate very much that I was able to get through and thank you. And again, it's occupation. It's not a war.
That's true. Thanks, Claudia. Nice words. Thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. That's very kind. Let America be America. It's a good one. It's a really good one. Sanchez in East L.A. Sanchez, you get to close the show here. We got about 3 minutes.
Okay, well, cool. Well, first of all, while I was on hold, I just got a call from Stephen in Burbank.
Oh, yeah.
He wants me to bring him a gallon of gas. He's stuck on Victory Boulevard.
I saw that picture. I don't know which one of you. He's stuck on Victory Boulevard. I don't know which
he
one of you.
He ran out of gas.
I don't know which one of you sent the picture of.
I did.
You sent it?
Yeah.
Of you and Stephen at
Yeah, that was last month at the Hollywood Anti-War March, and
wow.
We were both, you know, holding our Free Bradley Manning, and I was holding a chemtrail sign. I was there for that. But we're both in agreement as far as Bradley Manning is concerned.
Uh-huh.
You know, I just wanted to quickly say something about that.
Sure.
It's like, you know, of course, yes, the uniform military code of justice is different than normal rights that most Americans are accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
And that Manning, yes, he was a whistleblower. And he went on, I do understand, I mean, I've had heated conversations on Facebook about this entire situation, but above and beyond everything that what has happened, the crimes and the corruption that Manning exposed. I mean, I think he was most compelled by that, but the crime and corruption that he exposed, not a single person has voiced any opposition or has cried for accountability
right.
as far as any of the corruption has been exposed. I mean, I'm sure you've read a lot of the WikiLeaks to understand what's going on there, haven't you?
Yeah, nobody, you're absolutely right. Nobody has refuted it. As a matter of fact, the statement keeps being made over and over again that as far as is known, there has been no damage. There's been no fallout. Nobody has been shot in the back
right.
of the head.
Right.
What's happening to Manning is he is being tortured and held like this simply because he pulled the curtain back and let anyone who wanted to take a look see what kinds of lies, not just our government, but the lies that are tossed around at the highest levels, and then the civilian populations always suffer. That's all he did.
Yes. Well, that brings me to the other thing, and I want to applaud you as loudly as possible. The lies that were being dealt with when you were talking last week about April Gallup and the entire lawsuit that she was trying to bring regarding the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. For those that don't remember, April Gallup was the employed by the Pentagon and was injured during the attack,
right.
Yes, the supposed explosion, let's call it, mm-hmm. at the Pentagon.
Right.
And so I want to, if you haven't heard that one, I don't remember the exact date of it, but I would recommend, because you gave it so much time and you gave it... we don't always talk about 9/11. I'm one of these mm-hmm. people that definitely knows that 9/11 was an inside job. I produced some 9/11 programming for one of the radio stations here in L.A., mm-hmm. KPFK. So, I mean, I've done my own digging as far as both the Pentagon and the Twin Towers is concerned. So I just, as one fellow broadcaster to another, I just want to highly applaud you for that hour-long segment and the dedication and the seriousness that you gave it.
Because well, thanks, Sanchez.
We don't always talk about that. We know what we're talking about.
We do indeed. There's the music, pal. I got to go. Thanks, Sanchez. Take care. Well, thank goodness. 3 minutes from now, I'll be in bed. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I'll see you Monday, True Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.